Good evening. Merci à tous. Norman et aussi les personnes sur Zoom. Zoom. So I thought for my last talk I would say something a little lighter and hopefully shorter. In today's talk, I'm going to stick with the topic of water images and metaphors. I have searched through Suzuki and Dogen for metaphors and images about water. I should say that I had planned to do more than that, but there are so many metaphors in the Soto Zen. It's impossible. So another one, though, that I'm going to also give you two things are Charlotte Jocobek, because I often come back to her, as I said the other day. So many Soto Zen texts and commentaries dive into metaphorical language to illuminate core teachings. So this talk will be largely a collection of my gleanings on this subject, together with some remarks, my remarks on them. And I hope you find them useful too. So as always, I'm going to start with a Suzuki quote from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. By the way, in French, I never told you this, but the title Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind is translated as Esprit Zen, Esprit Neuf. Now this word, neuf, not like in nine, more like in new, right? Captures the idea of a mind without preconception. I mean, kind of touches on what Norman was saying today. So here's the quote in French. Même si des ondes s'élèvent dans votre esprit, l'essence de votre esprit est pure, exactement comme de l'eau claire où se forment des ondes. En réalité, l'eau a toujours des ondes. Les ondes sont ce que fait l'eau. Parler d'ondes séparées d'eau ou d'eau séparée d'ondes est une illusion. Quand vous comprenez ainsi votre esprit, votre sensation a une certaine sûreté. And in English, that means, even though waves arise, the essence of your mind is pure. It's just like clear water with a few waves. Actually, water always has waves. Waves are the practice of the water. To speak of waves apart from water, or water apart from waves, is a delusion. Water and waves are one. Big mind and small mind are one. When you understand your mind in this way, you have some security in your feeling. I was going to talk about Nirvana, the waterfall. I mean, it's a text I'm familiar with some, because my former teacher, Leila Smith Buckhorst, often talked about it. And I also have used it in my own Sangha. That's it. But Norman spoke about it twice, actually. And each time it was in relation to a death. First that of Tassajara resident Carolyn Meister. And second, that of Eddie Norton. And then I'm going to add, there is many, many, many other water drops, but I'm going to actually add Leila to this list, because I am going to dedicate this talk to her. As I mentioned on Wednesday, Leila was my teacher from about 2008 until her death in November 2022, so 16 months ago, is it? And I was given an obituary during her funeral at Green Gulch that Norman led. And it read part, I mean, just a few sentences from the obituary that I really think are about Leila. Leila was authentically and wholeheartedly there for those in her life. She made the time to show up for everyone who reached out, providing caring, trustworthy, and wise counsel. Peace, equanimity, and kindness permeated her being. In fact, Leila spoke too about mind waves. And the focus of mind waves is mind. But yet it's using the water element to describe something rather difficult to express. Upon reading it, I thought of how my senses, other things too, when I read often, I have this feeling of, my own mind sure creates mind waves. I'm sure it does for many others. However, the immediate headache that comes up when I smell the artificial fragrance, say on someone's clothes or a residual laundry fragrance, that is completely out of my control. Okay, so here are some water images and metaphors. I'm going to start with Suzuki in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Quote, after you have practiced for a while, you will realize that it is not possible to make rapid, extraordinary progress. Even though you try very hard, the progress you make is always little by little. It's not like going out in a shower in which you know when you get wet. In a fog, you do not know you're getting wet. But as you keep walking, you get wet little by little. If your mind has ideas of progress, you may say, oh, this pace is terrible. But actually, it is not. When you get wet in a fog, it's very difficult to dry yourself. So there is no need to worry about progress. And Leila also referred, she liked Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind too. Now personally, I have often experienced, and you probably have too, how fog gets me wet little by little if I stay in it for too long, or for a long time rather. And I like this image because it also evokes how difficult the practice is, a constant repetition that's not always easy. Fog might be something we try to avoid, but when it happens, there is no way to avoid it. And fog is also beautiful if we start paying attention to what is present right now, thinking of the misty sheen that can at the same time block your view, or our view, my view too. Oh, and yeah, Suzuki actually talks twice about Rosanne, I don't know how to say that, the famous, that's him, quote, the famous range of mountains covered by mist and the water said to cover all the earth. Now, I don't know Rosanne, But it must be something known in Japan, and I bet some of you maybe have seen it. Because, you know, Suzuki mentions it again in the next chapter. He says, Rozan is famous for its misty, rainy days. It does not mean to appreciate this sight by recollecting some scenery we have seen before. It's not so wonderful. I have seen that sight before. Or I have painted much more beautiful paintings. Rozan is nothing. End of the quote. The Rozan misty water metaphor highlights the distinction between second-hand and first-hand experience. I think that Zen is about first-hand experience often. Oh, and I wanted to tell you that right now there is two practice period participants that are probably in Japan. They just left, I think. And I wonder if they also will see this. I should ask them. Well, I'm not going to talk to them, but anyway. Okay, another quote in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. We have a saying, Dana Prajna Paramita. Dana means to give, Prajna is wisdom, and Paramita means to cross over or to reach the other shore. Our life can be seen as a crossing of a river. The goal of our life's effort is to reach the other shore, Nirvana. Prajna Paramita, the true wisdom of life, is that in each step of the way, the other shore is actually reached. To reach the other shore with each step of the crossing is the way of true living. So for my little comment, I decided to say that taking the idea of crossing over in each footstep perhaps a little further, we have this related metaphor about water. And I thought of progress is not a matter of far or near, but if you're confused, mountains and rivers will block your way. And I keep going with another water metaphor. And that one is in the chapter. By the way, if anybody wants the chapters, that I have them too. This one is in naturalness. Here it goes. The true practice of Zazen is to sit as if drinking water when you're thirsty. There you have naturalness. You do not have to force yourself to drink water when you're thirsty. You're glad to drink water. If you have true joy in your Zazen, that is true Zazen. End of the quote. And that made me think how each morning when I get up, I'm really thirsty. So I actually turned the kettle on first. It has water in already. And then I drink two or three glasses of water from the faucet, and then another one, another from the lukewarm water, sorry. And then I go to satisfy the profound thirst that Suzuki talks about. I go do my morning zazen. Okay, another quote from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. If you want to know what water is, you need science, and the scientist needs a laboratory. In the laboratory, there are various ways in which to study what water is. Thus, it is possible to know what kind of elements water has, the various forms it takes, and its nature. But it is impossible thereby to know water in itself. Indeed, water is an amazing compound. Over half of a human body is made of water. And water is an element that changes form often. It gets lighter when it freezes, which is usually not the way. Solid iron will sink to the bottom in molten iron and golden chocolate. Okay, now I read this in actually in on cube.com. Suzuki gave a talk called The Gift of Zazen. And here it is. Although they have water, the people in hell cannot drink it because the water burns like a fire, or water which they want to drink looks like blood, so they cannot take it. While for the celestial beings, it is a jewel, and for the fish, it is their home, and for the human being, it is water. You may think, if you think water is water, if you understand that water is water, as we do, so you may think, if you think water is right understanding, the water sometimes looks like jewel or home or blood or fire that is not real water. You may think in this way. As you think that Zazen practice is real practice and the rest of the everyday activities in the application is the application of Zazen, but this Zazen is fundamental practice. But Dogen Zenji amazingly said, water is not water. If you think water is water, your understanding is not much different from the understanding of fish's understanding and hungry ghost understanding of water or angel's understanding of water. There is not much difference between our understanding and their understanding. I like this, I must say. I mean, it asks us to see water not only through our eyes, but through the eyes of fish, celestial beings, and ghosts. It's certainly an encouragement to see things through other, even another human being's eyes. All right, and now I'm going to go to Dogen. Oh, only three. Because in the Genjo Koan, I mean, just in the, two or three pages, there are actually three water images, all different. We all know them. When you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving, but when you keep your eyes closely in the boat, you can see that the boat moves. Similarly, if you examine mere things with a confused body and mind, you might suppose that your mind and nature are permanent. When you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has unchanging self. I just want to add that Dogen did not have automobiles, because I feel like to a sleepy child in the backseat of a car, it definitely looks as if the world is flying past. Not very profound, but... Okay, another one. Enlightenment is like the moon reflected in the water. The moon does not get wet, nor is the water broken. Although its light is wide and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle and each wide. The whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in dewdrops on the grass or even in one drop of water. The dewdrop could represent an individual's limited perspective, yet the entirety of the moon, representing enlightenment or absolute reality, is reflected within it. Oh, I think that was my comment. I'm so sorry. Ooh, how awful. Okay, and the last one, you know about this, when you sail out in a boat into the midst of an ocean where no land is inside and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular and does not look any other way. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It is like a palace. It is like a jewel. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. So, my comment now. About all three, actually. It's incredibly useful to remember that the world and practice are much more intricate than we usually see or guess. And then at the same time, it's wonderful, Adogen, that we see an all-embracing vista in all of it. Okay, and I'm going to move on to Charlotte Jokobek in Nothing Special. I told you in my Way-Seeking Mind talk that reading it first started me on the Zen practice path. And I'm saying that because it was totally the ferry boat Suzuki speaks about in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, when he says, actually, to give one line of the teaching may be to make a ferry boat for someone. And there is that water again. Water. Okay, so Joko. Sorry, I always miss. All right. So it's from a chapter called Whirlpools and Stagnant Waters. We are rather like whirlpools in the river of life. In flowing forward, a river or stream may hit rocks, branches, or irregularities in the ground, causing whirlpools to spring up spontaneously here and there. Water entering one whirlpool quickly passes through and rejoins the river, eventually joining another whirlpool and moving on. Though for short periods it seems to be distinguishable as a separate event, the water in the whirlpools is just the river itself. The stability of a whirlpool is only temporary. The energy of the river of life forms living things, a human being, a cat or dog, trees and plants. Then what held the whirlpool in place is itself altered, and the whirlpool is swept away, re-entering the larger flow. The energy that was a particular whirlpool fades out, and the water passes on, perhaps to be caught again and turned for a moment into another whirlpool. That was the end of her quote. Now, I'm saying that a whirlpool beautifully captures the impermanence of things and events and people, but also has the same feel as the waterfall in Yosemite, or any other waterfall for that matter, with the drops re-entering the river. This passage always makes me think of Blanche Hartman, who I met her once or twice, yeah. And she said her favorite song was, and I heard that it's also, that Reb Anderson also likes this song. So maybe you can join me as I sing it, you know. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. So for me, of course, I'm asking myself, in what way life is a dream, and what is it to not be a dream. No, maybe in big mind it's a dream, and in small mind it's not always a dream. Okay, now, Joko's second quote, and it's called Melting Ice Cubes. It's kind of fun. Let's imagine for a moment that humans are large ice cubes, about 2 feet along each edge, with little heads and spindly feet. This is our life as humans most of the time, running about like ice cubes, bumping into one another sharply. Often we hit each other hard enough to shatter our edges. To protect ourselves, we freeze as hard as we can and hope that when we collide with each other's, they will shatter before we do. We freeze because we're afraid. Our fear makes us righteous, fixed, and hard. And we create mayhem as we bump into others. Any obstacles or unexpected difficulty is likely to shatter us. Ice cubes hurt. Ice cubes have a hard time. When we're hard and rigid, no matter how careful we are, we tend to slip and slide out of control. We have sharp edges that do damage, and we hurt not only others, but ourselves. A lucky few, however, may meet an ice cube that has actually melted and become a puddle. What happens if an ice cube meets a puddle? The warmer water in the puddle begins to melt the ice cube. Thirst is less and less of a problem. The ice cube begins to realize that it does not have to be hard, right, and cold. There is another way to be in the world. The ice cube learns how to create its own heat by the simple process of observation. The fire of attention begins to melt its hardness. Observing how it bumps into others and causes hurt, seeing its own sharp edges, the ice cube begins to realize how cold and rigid it has been. A strange thing begins to happen. As ice cubes begin to notice their own activities, to observe their ice cubeness, they become softer and mushier, and their understanding grows simply by observing what they are. The results are contagious. The comparison of human life to an ice cube is, of course, silly. I see people battering one another, however, hoping that by battering others, something will be gained. It never is. Someone has to stop battering and just sit with being an ice cube. And that's the end of that quote. It certainly has been very true for me. The longer I practice, the mushier I become. Or like, I don't know. And I sure hope the results are contagious, especially as the shuso. May I be softer in every aspect, including encouraging. And finally, I will talk about my own water metaphor, the one on the banner I use as a shuso with Everyday Zen this year. I actually use this on my website too for my Otsit Sangha. This water metaphor is an eight-sided snowflake. And in fact, it was Greg who first created it. I only riffed on it for the practice period banner. In real life, each snowflake is different. Altogether, they represent the transience of life. Each melts back into a large body of water as it falls. We don't wake up alone. We need a Sangha. So on the banner you have seen in this practice period, each snowflake contains, I don't know if you noticed, 8 figures sitting Zazen. And now Greg says, these also represent the Eightfold Path that Buddha taught with in his early days. And the 8 directions are right understanding, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. The Eightfold Path is a very useful companion to Zazen. And it is rich soil for the flower of Zazen. It is with the intention of encouraging Zazen in the neurodiverse community that I started with Greg the otsit.net online free sangha. That's otsit, like autistic sitting. Metaphors and images are a powerful teaching strategy because, for one, they may help us remember new information by connecting it to an existing framework. My guess is that each of us here today has, over time, accumulated a treasure chest of analogies and metaphors. I mean, I certainly have. But none of these will ever be able to describe everything about our immense bodies and mind. None of them, even the versatile water element, comes close to the trillions of elements in our bodies and minds. Paying attention to my body and mind during Zazen is what truly informs me the most. And I have not seen anything that can take the role of Zazen to pay such attention. I don't know. Zazen has an indescribable way to penetrate inside our bodies and minds to the marrow of our bone. Water metaphors and images sometimes seem to represent the interconnectedness of all things. They also can represent transitions from one state to another. And transitions are, it seems to me, often difficult. Birth, death, moving, relationships, and so on. And, you know, water does not even come close to the complexity. Nevertheless, the metaphorical language we use, whether with water or other thing, has a particularly usefulness in talking about Buddhist practice. Because some of the ideas or facts of true existence don't really fit inside our minds. I think we need metaphor to help us understand, to give us some entry points to this strange ideas, maybe. I also think this metaphorical language is also in part why maybe there is so much affinity with poetry in this practice. I think it gives us more of a direct feeling of the mind of another person. It can be more effective than explaining the facts. I mean, metaphor can sometimes explain better or better explain feelings. During Zazen, we might think that things are pretty static or that we're stuck, but it's like the river that flows endlessly. I mean, or so we hope that it's endless. Things are still happening and changing. And last paragraph. I hope these metaphors have been helpful to you as they have been to me. They're almost like little koans, well worse, repeated attention. Now, I checked out and found out a few books about Buddhist metaphors. Empty Vision by James Santucci and Metaphor and Literalism in Buddhism by Sunil Wang. However, as far as I can tell, though, none has been written specifically in the Soto Zen tradition. Now, I dreamed of putting together a little book with all the Zen, the Soto Zen metaphors and images we could come up with in the practice period, but I don't have it in me. Sorry. Unless someone here wants to work closely with me and help with the computer stuff. And if so, feel free to email me. And that's all I have to say for this evening. And most thank you for your practice. Beings.